You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolensky and Wes Boss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today's episode is sponsored by two awesome companies. We got Kyle Prinsloo's freelancing course, which is available at studywebdevelopment.com/freelancing. And we've got DevLifts back to get you in shape for the new year at devlifts.io. They have some special plans running for the month of January. So stay tuned for some more details about that. With me, as always, today is Scott Tolensky. How you doing, Scott?
Hey, it's a new year. It's a new me, and I'm ready to go. This is going to be our first episode in a little bit. So we're going to see how it is. I think we're both pretty highly caffeinated, though. So hopefully I hope that works for us. I hope that gets things going because, you know, I'm going to need it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually feeling pretty good. I had a nice time off with the holidays and just long enough. I was excited to get back to work and still felt pretty good. So that's good.
Yeah.
All right. So today is a potluck episode. A potluck episode is where you go to syntax.fm and you can submit your question to us and we will attempt to answer it for you. And these are always fun because we go through a whole bunch of different topics and spending just a couple minutes on each one. So today we've got questions for newbies, questions about cron jobs, questions about learning stuff quickly, event tracking, all kinds of stuff. It's going to be a good one. So let's jump on into it. You want to grab the first question there, Scott?
Oh, you bet. First question is, this is from David, no last name here. It says, where is the best place to start with JS coming from WordPress? Bootstrap Scaffold with Express, or is Bootstrap too old now? Okay, so this one is a little bit tough. I wouldn't even necessarily go to Bootstrap in general if I'm looking to learn JS, just because I generally see Bootstrap as more of just like a HTML and CSS sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it depends on what you're trying to learn with JavaScript. Are you trying to learn how to build just general little doodads and widgets and things like that, right? If you're just trying to build little things here and there, then, you know, I might take a basic JavaScript sort of training aspect to it and learn sort of the fundamentals of JavaScript. But if you're looking to replace that sort of WordPress flow that you had before of building some sites that are maybe for clients in that sort of way, I might take a little different approach to this. And this, I don't know if this is necessarily controversial at all, but, you know, people tend to say learn, you know, the foundations first before you pick up a framework. Don't learn the framework until you learn blah, blah, blah. But personally, I've learned quite a bit of JavaScript myself through frameworks, specifically React because it's so JavaScripty. Now, Vue is pretty JavaScripty as well. There's a little bit of magic in there involved. But, you know, if you're trying to replace that WordPress gap and you want to get some experience with JavaScript, I would honestly pick up React and Gatsby. Take a basic React course, learn, you know, what's doing what where, and then I would take a Gatsby course because Gatsby is really one of those platforms that does eloquently fill the void of WordPress. If you take React and you're not super into it, maybe try a Vue course. There is a Vue comparable version of Gatsby called GridSum, which is very, very similar, basically borrows all of the ideas from Gatsby. And I personally like using frameworks to learn JavaScript. Now, I understand that not everybody sees it that way, but I personally learned quite a bit of JavaScript through frameworks, and I don't think it's a bad approach.
Yeah, I agree as well. We've said this many times in the podcast where, like, most people who learn web development by learning WordPress, they didn't sit around for a year learning PHP. What they did is they started just sort of hacking away at WordPress. And through that, you sort of struggled through and learned the basics of PHP. And I think that the same can be done with JavaScript. Not saying that you should not know a line of JavaScript, but obviously do a little bit of fundamentals, get kind of comfortable with how things are working, but then reach for one of these like starters that you get with Gatsby. Has all kinds of starters, and I think through that you can sort of work backwards, and you're gonna find it's gonna be frustrating, but yeah, you'll find yourself in a lot of situations where you'll say, oh man, like what is this thing right here, and you have to go and learn that, or I need to loop over a list of things, or I need to combine these two elements into one. And I think that's a kind of a neat way at approaching it. So if that's what you're looking to do, if you're trying to like replace your WordPress, then I would go with that. Otherwise, if you are just looking to like sprinkle on a little bit of JavaScript into your WordPress websites, I would probably go and look at a vanilla JavaScript course out there. Obviously, I have a free one, javascript30.com. There's lots of stuff out there that you can get up and running, which is good because I know a lot of the WordPress plugins are still based on jQuery, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But if you want to be a little bit more future-proof, if you want to learn some more modern stuff, I would probably focus on your vanilla JavaScript skills there.
Yeah, absolutely. Super cool.
Great. Next question we have from Daniel Hulick. Just a general question about cron jobs, how to set them up and the best tools to use. Should they run on their own server or can they run on the application server? How does your application server talk to the cron server? So let's back that up a little bit. A cron job is how do you explain a cron job? A cron job is something that happens.
You can think of it like an alarm clock, right? An alarm clock goes off at a set schedule whenever you program it, right? You tell your alarm to go off at 6 a.m., it's going to go off at 6 a.m. So you could think of it as like, basically, this is like an alarm clock. Yeah, I don't know. That's what I think of it like.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have something that you need to do every X amount of time, every day, every month, every Monday, twice a day at 3 o'clock, if you need to do something at a set interval every X number of days, time, whatever. So some examples of that might be, you might need to back up a database once a day. I have that on my server. I back up my database once a day. You might want to run some cleanup jobs. You might want to run a daily scrape in a daily email. So I've talked about before, I used to run a daily deal aggregator. And part of that, the entire thing was based on cron jobs because I think once an hour, we would scrape the website for the deal. And then once a day at 7 a.m., we would gather up all those deals and put them on the website, as well as gather up all those and send off the data to MailChimp. So you end up writing a lot of these sort of like scripts that need to be run at a certain point. And then what you have is you have a script, and these scripts can be written in any language. They can be written in PHP, they can be written in Node, they can be written in Bash. And then you tell your server, please run this command once a day. And what you do is you would say like node send emails.js or bin bash backup and once a day. And then the server will run those for you. So that's pretty much how it works at a very low level. How do you make a cron job? Should you use it on your own server? At the very lowest level, you have cron built into your server. So all Linux servers will have cron jobs built into them. They'll have a folder or they'll have a file on there where you can just crack open the cron job and add an extra line. You write this little syntax that is comprised of numbers, forward slashes and stars that correlate to how often they should happen. And then the server will just simply rerun those. So for an example I have on my own server is that once every 3 months, how often do Let's Encrypt certs expire?
I think it's three months. I'm not sure.
Every 3 months I run this command that's called certbot renew, and that goes off and renews all of my servers early on a Sunday morning. And then I have another cron job that, I don't know, 20 minutes later or when that's finished, it will reload my Nginx config. And I had some trouble with that earlier because I was running them out of sync, but that's kind of how it works. And then have you ever used Nodecron there, Scott?
I have used Nodecron. Yes, that's the only one I've used, to be honest.
Okay, so you can, instead of like writing like a low level cron in Linux, you can write like a JavaScript cron based job in Node. It has this JavaScript interface for it. So that's great because it's really easy to write them. The only downside I think there is your Node app has to be running, which in some cases you don't want to have a script continually running. You just want to like start up that script, do your work, and then shut it down. But I think that's what I would reach for. Where do you run your cron jobs, Scott? Or do you have any cron jobs?
I have no cron jobs.
Oh, nope. There you go.
But, you know, that said, I have had cron jobs in the past, and not for Level Up, but for other projects for scheduling and stuff like that. And they typically run for me just on the same server that my application ran on. That said, small application, low user base, it wasn't necessarily too complex. So it wasn't necessarily a danger or anything like that.
So as you get into more and more cron jobs, there's this idea of just running a separate server or a separate service. There's a lot of like GUI services out there that will allow you to log in and have a nice interface for creating your cron jobs. And they will tell you some stats of how many times they ran, when they ran, last time they ran, the result of that thing being run. I did a quick Google and there's like hundreds of different services. The funniest one I found was called deadmansnitch.com. Nice. Which is like a GUI for setting up these cron jobs.
I would love a GUI for that. That's something that I would actually use a GUI for. Because you think about like a calendar, you're setting reoccurring events. That's like prime for a nice little interface there. Even though, I mean, in code, it's not that hard either. But it would be cool to have that visual of it.
Yeah, me too. I just don't have that much use case right now for cron jobs.
Same.
Because a lot of stuff is a lot more event-based. Like even I think about, like I have a script that will freeze people's accounts when credit card fraud is detected. Mm-hmm. And that's not based on a check every so often. That's based on something else that's called a webhook. And that comes back from my payment providers. And whenever they suspect something fishy is going on, it will ping my server and that will run a script that will freeze that user's account. So it's not necessarily a cron job, but it's more of a webhook. So do I have anything else to say about cron jobs here? Let me just pull this up. Oh yeah, writing the little syntax for how often something should happen. Like if you want to run everything at the 10, like 1:10, 2:10, 3:10 of every hour, but only Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturdays, then you have to write these really complex cron tabs. So there's all kinds of good websites out there. My favorite is corntab.com.
Ooh.
Where you can just, it's a nice little GUI for typing in when and how often you want it, and then it will spit out the cron tab for you.
And you know, Nodecron has a whole examples folder in their repo. So if you want like legit examples, they have really nice in-code examples to get that information. So every 30 minutes, every 10 minutes, between 9 and whatever, complex examples, simple examples. But in case you want to see it in the context of Nodecron, it's right there too.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you should make sure of is time zones, which is one of the hardest things in the world. But
yes,
if your server is in a different time zone than your development machine, make sure that you are thinking about that. When I was doing that daily deal thing, I was in Eastern. The server was in LA, whatever time zone that is. And then we were scraping like websites and had to send it out at 7 a.m. of the time zone that is of the person who was viewing the email. So it's so confusing because you had to scrape it at 7 a.m. of the websites. But I had to figure like, okay, translate that. And it's much better if you just kind of do it all in UTC.
I was doing a scheduling app and it was so difficult because if someone was trying to schedule an appointment and let's say they're scheduling an appointment in Denver and then they're in, let's say, Germany, you know, what times do you show them? When do you send them the alerts? And all it gets so complex and so confusing so quickly. It's just dates. Yeah. It's just a lot of date stuff. And, you know, one of the things that's also complex and confusing is hitting the gym, getting fit. I mean, it's a new year, new you, and you might not be ready for it. You might walk into the gym and look at all these things like, I have no idea. It's looking like rust laying to you or something. You don't even know what it is yet. You're just interested by it. So that's where DevLifts comes into play. Now, DevLifts have been a longtime sponsor of Syntax, and they are the best way to get a handle on what you should be doing in 2019 or whatever year you are listening to this, time traveler, and you can get fit, you can get healthy, and you can get a better mind and body.
Yes, I'm glad that you said mind there, because so it's a new year. Everyone's got New Year's resolutions.
It's new year, new you, Wes.
New year. My wife and I always joke because all of last year I said that, like, new year, new me. Anytime, like,
oh, yeah,
like it's like a Tuesday night and you crack a beer. She's like, ooh, a beer on a Tuesday. I'm like, new year, new me.
Dude, I've been doing that exact same thing. And I have a feeling like Courtney is probably super annoyed by it by now.
But we were celebrating how I successfully dissed New Year, New Me for an entire year. anyways, it's a new year and it's a new you, and you probably have some goals, and so those might be losing weight and those might be getting in shape, but those goals also might be getting better at web development. And this is not really a slant that DevLifts tells me to take. I just think that it's very true. If you want to absolutely nail being a web developer, you cannot ignore the mental, the physical side of things. So just over the holidays, not going to the gym, eating poorly, I noticed that I had such a brain fog the first week back. And after just a week and a half of going to the gym a couple times a week, lifting heavy weights and sweating it out, I noticed that like this week and last Friday, I'm like so much more on it than I was the previous week. And I think it's really important just to spend your time focusing on your health if you want to really slam dunk being a web developer. So DevLifts has been on in the past. They've got these two different plans. They've got Fit Start, which is good for beginners who are looking to sort of get back at it. And you got DevLifts Premium, which is you're going to get like a lot of handholding. You're going to get a lot of laser focused approach. You're going to get access to JC and Thad, who are also web developers and personal trainers, getting this thing up and running. However, right now they've got just for January, they have Back for a Limited Time, which is their 8-week plan. So this is actually something that I went through myself over a year ago now, and I highly recommend it. Basically, you talk to them, you'll do a survey, talk about what your goals are, how you want to work out. Do you want to go to the gym? Do you want to just do something at home? How often can you go? And from that, you're going to get a personalized training and nutrition plan, which is really, really cool. So I went through it myself. I had a little talk with them. I filled out a form and I said, like, this is what I'm looking to do. And they gave me this awesome plan, which is great because I just had to go to the gym, open up my phone and look at the plan, and I knew exactly what I had to do every single day at the gym. I told them I can only go 3 times a week, and they have that out. So I'm not going to gush too much more about DevLifts because you know that I love them.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
If you want to check it out, use the code NEWYEAR19 and you're going to get $50 off the one-time purchase price of $199, which is great. And then we also have for their Fit Start and Fit Premium. If you're even more interested in those, you can check them out. Use the code Syntax and Tasty, and those are going to get you 50% off those plans respectively. So thanks so much to DevLifts for sponsoring. I know a lot of you listening have already gone through the DevLifts program, and then I'd love to hear also anyone who's joining in this year.
Yeah. Yeah. We should have a little like fit check-in, a little progress thing, because I've been tweaking my fitness stuff and been working hard. So yeah, I'm excited. This year always brings those kind of energies, you know, New Year sort of stuff. Next yeah. question we have is from another Wes Orr,
spelled weird
O-R-R, Wes Orr. That'd be cool if
brother
that was
to Bobby Orr.
Yeah, one name. Yeah, wonder if he's Canadian. What new skills, frameworks, or projects are you looking forward to learning or attempting this year in 2019? And we kind of talked about this in our last episode, but I thought this was maybe a little bit different than some of the things we talked about in the previous episode where we talked about what we're looking forward to and stuff like that. This is a little bit more specific to what we want to learn. Now, I personally am always looking to get better at the things that I'm doing. So I would love to get better at GraphQL. Now, my whole API is GraphQL, and I've been using it now for, I don't even know, it's been a while. But I think there's always stuff to learn about it, whether that's like optimizing the API itself, making things a little bit more elegant, just improving it. So I am consuming a ton of GraphQL content, just blogs and podcasts and whatever's out there. I'm all over it. I also want to get into more perf-based stuff. I spent a lot of time on performance for Level Up, but with some of the additions to React coming, I think it's going to be even easier. So I will be doing quite a bit more things with code splitting, not that I haven't already, but I want to get into doing more things like prefetching. I want to optimize sort of loading of certain aspects, both database and front-end stuff. I want to really get into suspense, React suspense, because I think it's going to be amazing and how it's going to potentially affect data loading throughout the entire site. I think it just gives you a lot of tools and flexibility to decide how that data is coming in. Once the server-side rendering picture is in, I'm excited to dive in. And then hooks. You know, hooks are going to be a big deal throughout the course of the year. I've already worked with hooks quite a bit, but I am looking to learn more. We mentioned in the hooks episode the use hooks mailing list. And every single time I get one of those, I love it. I love Pawn Through. We're already using some of those hooks from that mailing list in the level up site, and I'm loving it. So I think I just want to get better at all this stuff, the stuff that I'm doing. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hooks one is interesting because like I've written a couple hooks myself, but every time I see somebody else write a hook, I like break it down and go, oh, that's such a neat way to use it, because it's one of those things that I don't think we've totally figured it out yet. And it's this new tool that we're just starting to see lots of new use cases for it.
Absolutely.
Personally, I am also really excited about the new stuff in React, which is the lazy loading, React Suspense, and React Hooks. I think that's really going to make writing React much easier and much more enjoyable, as at the same time letting us build better websites. Like I think like they're going to be faster, they're going to be a better code split, they're going to be loaded on demand, all that good stuff, and it's going to be easy to author. Because I think that's maybe like that's like one theme of the year, where like we always talk about doing these things like code splitting and lazy loading. And in the past, it's just been hard to do that. And that's why most people don't do it. But I think that as the developer tooling gets much easier, it's going to be way easier for us developers to make better websites. I'm also building a new website on Gatsby, which I'm really excited about as well, for my own website. I'll talk about that a little bit more. I've got a whole bunch of questions about why and what and WordPress and all that good stuff. So we'll maybe do a little hasty treat on it. I'm excited about CSS Subgrid, which we're going to have a show coming up on that. I'm excited about the whole Rails for Node. I think that this is going to be a year where we're going to see significant movement in the kind of batteries included framework space. And then finally, CSS Houdini, which is the sort of the JavaScript API that's going to let you implement custom CSS properties and values. So a lot of cool stuff. Maybe we'll come back to it at the end of this year and see how much of that I really did work with. But those are high on my list.
Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and move CSS Houdini onto my list, because I'm going to spend some serious time with CSS Houdini. I love the whole look of that. We talked a little bit about it at our live show, but just some of the cool demos. I think there's a lot of growth that needs to happen there still, but just the fact that it exists is pretty darn cool.
Absolutely. Next question we have here is Wes and Scott. I listen to your podcast. There's no name on this one, by the way. I listen to your podcast on a regular basis and wanted to ask you too, if you use any particular software for tracking analytics on your site. If so, do you ever use this data to run split tests? And lastly, if you're running split tests, what is your preferred method in doing so? Do you use a third-party solution for it? So a split test, for those who don't know, is this idea of building a website and running a whole bunch of different combinations. And the most simple example is you have a homepage that looks one way, and then you have a secondary homepage that looks a different way. And then maybe you see, oh, the picture of Scott smiling with a blue button makes sales go up 10%. And then you start to use that, and people get really, really in depth with it, because you can make a whole bunch of things like the font, the picture, the colors, the size, the price, all of those things that are related to a website. You can make those variable, and then these machine learning algorithms will just play with all of those different variables and come to a which one sells the most things, or which one makes people stay on the page the longest, or which specific blue is like, I've heard crazy stories about these big companies testing out 40 different shades of blue and seeing that. So it's kind of interesting. And running in order to do that, you need lots and lots of data to look at. So I don't really track a whole lot. I wish I tracked more. But what I do track is obviously the standard Google Analytics stuff that comes for free. I track purchases. When something buys something, I ping that back to my Google Analytics. And that way I can see how many people are visiting the website and actually converting at the end of the day. I also have my email provider, which is currently Drip. They have a whole bunch of event tracking stuff inside of it as well. So if somebody opens an email and then buys something, I can see like what portion of the people who opened it bought something. However, I almost never look at that analytics, just because almost all web developers run ad blockers, and those analytics are so far off from my actual analytics that I know how many I'm selling that it's almost like not worth looking at, because it's just not good analytics at all.
Yeah. I run into some issues with some of this stuff because it's just sort of, it's not necessarily worth it enough for me at this point, right? Because again, you need lots of data points, and I don't have the data points. You know, I have good amount of data, but do I have the amount that it's actually going to be worth my time setting it up, configuring it, getting it going, doing the test, looking at the results and all of that stuff? Not me personally. In the future, you know, maybe you'd hire out somebody to do that sort of thing. I haven't done A/B tests because there are things that I know will make a big impact that I don't need A/B tests to tell me are going to make a big impact that I still haven't gotten to. So it's like until I'm looking to optimize beyond the point of my own visibility, when I'm looking for visibility, then that's probably when I'll go more in that direction. I'm not saying I think it's extremely valid, but me personally, I'm not needing it.
This type of thing I get emails about and questions about all the time where people are saying like, how should I track this and what should I be tracking? And the person hasn't even like built a product or like managed to market it or something like these like A/B split testing running analytics. This is what's going to happen when you're making $1 million and for a couple of weeks worth of work, you can squeeze an extra like $70,000-$100,000 mm-hmm. out of it. And you can like, oh, that's well worth it at that point where you've got so many visitors, you're selling so much where a 1-5% bump in sales is going to be extremely significant for your bottom line. And that's where a lot of these companies get heavy into it.
Yeah.
It's not really something my return on, it's the same thing with Facebook advertising for me right now. My return on spending time on these things or hiring it out and having to spend the time in meetings and talking and implementing it into your platform, it's just not worth it in the long run versus just making another course and versus providing good value content.
Yeah. And it's funny, we had a question in the submitted for the potluck that was asking, I didn't answer this question for a reason, so I'm sorry to the person who asked this question. I don't have it pulled up right now. But there was a question that was basically like, what choices can you step through all of the choices that you would make for building an application that scales from back end to front end to testing to design to blah, 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 to the entire project. How would you make those choices to build an app that scales right away? And then it followed up with, I have a really good idea for an app, but I don't have a lot of money to spend on it or whatever. The answer is if that's the situation, then I mean, there's a billion good ideas and it takes a little bit more than that to want to build this thing. Now, granted, you could spend all of the time and money to build something that's rock solid to grow. But if you haven't tested your idea a little bit, and you haven't actually done that sort of work, then man, you might just be throwing a lot of time out the window.
Yeah, I think I got this question in my Instagram, on my Twitter DM, on my AMA. I think I got every possible way that I can connect to someone. I got this question from this person. And the question was like, I'm going to build this like next Twitter.
Yep.
And how do I scale the entire thing? What technology do I? And like, you're thinking about the wrong problem. You should really be thinking about, are people going to use this thing? Because if you have scaling problems, you are in a very, very good spot to actually have hit. Because scaling problems can be solved to a certain point by simply just throwing more money and more server time at it.
To an extent,
And then at a certain point, it becomes like I'm on drip right now for my email and it's dog slow. Like sometimes takes 2 or 3 hours to calculate a segment of my list. And now that's biting them in the butt, but they are likely making millions of dollars a month from this thing and they're able to go hire the smartest people in the world to solve these scaling issues that they have.
Nice.
So segment.io, or actually it's segment.com. What this will do is it will give you one interface for tracking things, and then it will push that data out to Google Analytics and, I don't know, Hotjar and all these other tracking things out there that are going to track you across the web. I haven't checked it out, but I know that's what a lot of people use in the big business world.
Word. Cool. Next one is from Kumar Abhirup. If I got that last
good.
Name. That, you think that was
I
good?
You nailed it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad about it. I just went for it. There was no hesitation there. This question is, what's your best tip for young coders to stay productive and not lose time? My tip is to make it easy on yourself. Because a lot of times we think that there's some like that we're going to be good enough to just buckle down and do this productivity stuff. And I've talked about this before, but I use applications like one called Focus for macOS and I don't know, several for my phone and things like that, that block specific apps that I know I reach for. They block specific websites that I know I reach for. And a lot of these, like Focus for Mac, will shame you by giving you a quote about like wasting time or something. And every time I get one of those quotes, it makes me feel upset that I decided to open up, you know, Reddit or something while I should be working. So I highly recommend letting the robot do the blocking for you. It's not like I don't have the self-control, but these things help you build the self-control. Another thing you can do is to stay excited about the work that you're doing, whether or not it's like a problem or a technical issue, or maybe it's a new thing you're trying to learn. I am always more productive. I'm always more in the zone when the thing I'm trying to learn is something that excites me. It gets me going. It makes me want to work on it. And I follow that down the rabbit hole, right? It's like, I gotta work on this thing. And so for me, that is the most important thing to stay productive, is to really enjoy and be excited by what you're doing. And in those times when you're not excited or enjoying it, block the stuff, take breaks, go on walks, do that sort of thing. That's how I do it.
Yeah, totally. I think, first of all, you're 17. You could spend 10 years right. and still be younger than Scott and I. At this kind of thing. So you have tons of time. I know that you feel like you want to just rush into it and you want to be building this like amazing stuff. I remember that all too well, of you're just hungry to build stuff, but your skills are way behind where you actually wish you were. And the idea is that you just like, how do I like rush through this so I can get to that? And first of all, you can just put in lots of time. But second, I wouldn't sweat it all that much, because you are so young that you can probably get really, really up to speed and become a very good developer in probably like three and a half years.
Yeah, I was very productive at that age at the skate park, and that's pretty much it. You know,
it's true. Like, I was actually building websites at this point myself, but I didn't feel like there was so much on my shoulders. It was just sort of a fun thing. And that's what leads me to my next point, is that excitement about what you're working on is the biggest productivity hack, especially when you are first starting it on. If you try to like force yourself into it, if you try to put in too much more time than you should, that's a great way to lead to burnout. And that's a great way to start to hate what it is that you are initially excited about. So making sure that you do have good balance, whether that's hanging out with friends, going to the gym, having other hobbies, is pretty important as well. Also, we have a whole show on productivity that are other hacks, because like I have that myself. I just deleted the Twitter app from my computer for this week just to try it out, just trying to use the web interface, because I find that I probably will spend less time doing that.
Nice.
So yeah, good luck, Kumar. 17. Seriously, if you keep at it, you could be in a really good spot where you're going to be much younger than most people were when they even thought about starting web development.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Wes and Scott, I am 17 and learning web dev. So I might have insinuated that the last asker was 17. You might not be, but hopefully you're 17 as well and learning web dev. I'm pretty concerned about
a young coder.
Okay, that's fine. I'm pretty concerned about my skills and I am having imposter syndrome. I am not sure if I should start freelancing. Please tell me if I'm ready to freelance work. So I really like this question, because I was in these shoes when I was 17, and I remember being like, is it okay that I do work for other people, because I don't have a company and I'm just this guy on the internet. I know how to make websites, kind of. But is it okay that I would charge people money for this kind of thing? So I think the important thing to note here is, yes, you start taking on freelancing work here, but make sure that the type of works that you take on is low stakes. So whether that's like, one of my first websites ever was for a pool company. It was just a friend's dad needed a website for his pool company to go online. And that was really low stakes, because it was just a pamphlet website where we had some photos and some contact information and some information on there. So low stakes, family, friends, volunteer for people who a website is not going to make or break their business, because it is possible that you will hit a roadblock and it'll take you longer than you think. But I also know that I grew so much in that time myself, where I was really, because it was for money and because it was for somebody else, I had to push through those hard times, and I had to make sure that I learned it, because just shelving it because I didn't think I was there yet was just not an option.
Yeah. And at this age, you might not have the best freelance skills, especially if you don't have any prior experience. So don't expect everything to be easygoing because one, you might not have great communication skills. That's something that you're going to learn and you're going to practice quite a bit once you actually start freelancing. And two, you might not have the skills to work with clients yet because you haven't had that experience. Not just talking to clients, but like actually understanding what a client wants. Because one of the problems that I faced when I first started freelancing is I had this idea in my head of what the site could look like. And that idea did not necessarily match one-to-one with what the client saw. And because I thought I was the person who had all the answers, obviously I didn't, I was trying to move their direction closer to my direction when in reality you want to be working more closely with what they want to be seeing, right? Like I had this vision and it wasn't about my vision. You know, it took me a little while to learn that's not about my vision, it's about their vision. And these are sort of a lot of skills that you need to pick up. But again, the low stakes aspect of it is totally key because you don't want to get in over your head too quickly, have a big problem, have a bad experience, and feel bad about it or whatever. I mean, everything's a learning experience. But again, low stakes will help you very much so. And if you want to gain some skills to become a freelancer, maybe avoid these potential pitfalls at all because, well, who likes failing things or having problems? You might want to pick up a course on freelancing. And there's a really excellent course that we recommend over here at Syntex called Kyle Prinsloo's Freelancing Course. And this thing is really great. So with it gives you a ton of stuff. So with more about this course is Wes.
Yeah. So Kyle Prinsloo sponsored a bunch of episodes in the past, and he is back for another episode, which is great, which means that a lot of you are buying the course and enjoying it, which is cool. So the thing about freelance is that you don't necessarily like have a mentor or a boss or a company that will help you learn, especially the skills that is like talking to clients and positioning yourself, blogging, SEO, marketing, how to get paid, how to price yourself. So if you want to learn the skills that is everything surrounding freelancing, you want to check out studywebdevelopment.com/freelancing. And this is a complete bundle that includes a freelancing and beyond ebook, a whole bunch of HTML and CSS templates, private Facebook community, which I think those are, I'm part of a whole bunch of these private Facebook communities for different things. Like I'm part of one for email marketing. And whenever I have a question about something very specific, it's nice to be able to post it in there because first it's private. It's not embarrassing to just ask the entire world. And second, you get people that who are also invested in the exact same thing. You get access to the Slack as well, portfolio, whole bunch of, I'm not going to go through everything that is in here because there's all kinds of questionnaires and checklists and whatnot. You can check it out at studywebdevelopment.com/freelancing. So pretty cool little package or not a pretty cool, huge package that we've got here. And you want to buy the bundle. And if you use the coupon Syntax, all caps, you're going to get 25% off that. So go ahead and grab it at studywebdevelopment.com/freelancing.
Big, big package. That's what I got out of that.
Next question we have here is about React Native. The question is, React Native, what is it? How do people tend to use it? If you want a native app and a web app, are they separate or do they share code? Can we start nagging Wes to do a course on it? David.
Hey.
All David. Right.
Yeah. So React Native, it's a platform for building native apps. How do people tend to use it? They tend to use it a lot like any sort of React-based platform where like create React app or something where it gets you started. But more so than that, they use it to build a full out native app. And sometimes it starts with create React app and then you move it into an Android environment or an Xcode environment. But typically I think that when it started in React Native, it typically stays in React Native. If you want a native web app or native app and a web app, are they separate? Do they share code? They typically do not share code. It's a misconception that it's like a write once, publish everywhere sort of platform. And it's more of sort of a, you can utilize the tools that you know from web platforms to build native mm-hmm. apps. So there isn't necessarily code sharing. Now there is something called React Native Web, which allows you to use React Native components for the web, which then would allow you to share some code. but I have not used that myself. I know there are people that use it who like to have that aspect of it. And that seems like a pretty interesting avenue. But just out of the box, because native environments have very different things, like the styling aspects of a native app is very different than web styling. The components themselves, you know, there's no standard HTML tags. You have things like a view and a list view and things like that, or a touchable area instead of a button. So there are some pretty big differences that sort of bridge the gap. But that said, you still get to use all of the React goodness that you know and love. You want to use React as you know it, you can do so. So that's typically why people love React Native. Now, I personally have a couple of React Native courses on Level Up, and it's a pretty cool platform. I will caution that it is one of the more frustrating platforms that I've worked on. Things break for no reason occasionally. Compilers give you error messages that just restarting the compiler fixes. And sometimes your entire project gets in the red and it's a little tough to get it out of it. Now, it seems like there's been a lot of progress about React Native being made. And I think this year will be really interesting for React Native in terms of how it's simplified and how it's improved and how it grows as a platform, because it seems like every year React Native grows quite a bit.
Yeah, I think we should mention, like, the idea behind React Native is that the UI, like the interface of your application, is native, meaning that on iOS, it's built in the iOS, like Scott said, you have a viewport and you have a text tag and you have an image tag. So you don't use HTML tags and you don't use CSS to style it. You use the native thing, and that's why the React Native apps feel good. We've all been on websites where they don't feel like they've been done natively. And then there's also one for Android as well. And then a lot of the business logic is then done in JavaScript. So obviously you make all of your classes in JavaScript. But if you've got a whole bunch of logic around fetching data, filtering data, authentication, all that stuff, often that business logic, it will be written in JavaScript unless it's something that you have to use a native bridge for in order to talk to it. So I haven't built a whole lot in React Native, just a couple little apps as testers here or there. But I do know that you can share libraries or like shared business logic between the two. But as Scott said, it's not a write once, deploy everywhere. You'll need to rewrite your UI once for every platform. So once for the iOS, once for the web, once for Android. If you do have some like logic that's around data fetching or filtering data or anything like that, that's sort of behind the scenes, that can be shared between all of them.
Yeah. And you could share quite a bit between iOS and Android. And there are even some like theming libraries that will spit out the human design guidelines and the material design guidelines with the same component, so you don't even have to think about it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. When I write React Native, I'm typically not doing two separate things unless it's like, okay, now I have to account for the back button in Android or something like that. But there is a good amount of reusability there, in my opinion, or in my experience.
That's cool. People ask me all the time about React Native, and I just send them to Scott because I've looked at it, but there's a lot of like churn in React Native, and yeah, that thing would go out of date so quickly.
It does.
There's a lot of tooling. I think like it's just a bit like hard, at least last time I saw it, it's a bit hard. And often when things are, like Scott says, it's frustrating. Often that frustration comes back on me as a tutorial maker and not necessarily the framework itself, which it might be me in some cases, it certainly can be. But I know in a lot of cases, it's just a frustrating framework to work with because it's so new.
Yeah. And it's funny because I would list my one large React Native course I did as maybe one of the worst professional decisions I've ever made. Now, I don't sell this course anymore, but I was like, all right, I'm going to go all in and I'm going to make a huge course. It's going to be giant. It's going to be all encompassing. And it was seriously out of date in like 2 months. And I spent so much time on it and it like absolutely crushed me. So then that's one of the reasons why I was like, okay, I'm going to do smaller, especially if I'm approaching this from React Native, smaller tutorial series that, yeah, go out of date, I can just redo it. That said, I do have a new intermediate level React Native series coming out in 2019. No total announcements on it yet, but it's going to be really cool. I have a lot of interesting ideas going on here, and I think everyone is going to be very excited by it. So that's all I can say right now.
Somebody sent me a message on Instagram the other day when I posted a screenshot of my Google Home app with all my lights and switches and stuff in it. And someone said, did you know that's built in React Native? And I said, huh, I didn't
know that either.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true or not, but maybe. If somebody knows,
that's
if
cool
you have
app.
A good example of apps that are built in React Native, tweet us at SyntaxFM because I would love to check some of them out.
Yeah, I want to see some. Cool. I think that's it. All right, do you want to move on to sick picks? It's been a little bit of while here. So do you have
a
sick pick for us?
So I've got two sick picks. First what day is today? It's January 8th and I've done two books in the year already. Nice. I feel like I'm on fire. So I did the book, which you recommended called Bad Blood, mm-hmm. which is about Theranos. Holy smokes. Ooh. What a enjoyable, twisted, crazy.
Twisted is right.
A story. So it's a book about how this like startup in Silicon Valley was going to revolutionize blood testing with the prick of a finger. And turns out it was all lies and it's nuts. So I recommend that. That's just kind of an aside because Scott's already sick picked that. But I'm going to sick pick the Chip Gaines book. I also read.
He's got a book?
Yeah. It's Chip Gaines is the husband of Joanna Gaines, who and they are the stars of the Fixer Upper and Magnolia Empire. And me and my wife, Caitlin, admire them quite a bit. They're about 10 years older than us. They're both entrepreneurs. They're both sort of go-getters. And we see a lot of similarities between them and us. So I went and grabbed his book and I listened through it. It's only 5.5 hours on audiobook. I listened to it at like 1.75x. So it only took me a couple hours to get through it. And he's just got an awesome outlook on life and in terms of like talking to people, talking with employees, how to treat people, how to take risks, how to love. Mostly he's just like family first. It's just crazy because they shut down their TV show, which was the most popular show on cable television. And in the height of it, they shut it all down because it was becoming too much to run their business, run their family, and do this TV show. So I really enjoyed it. Somebody else told me to check out the other one, which is The Magnolia Story, which I'm gonna check out as well. So that's a sick pick for me.
Nice. I'm going to have to, I didn't know he had a book. I'm a big fan as well.
Oh, I forgot to say what it's called. It's called Capital Gains.
That's right.
And the tagline is smart things I learned doing stupid stuff.
Love it. Love the title. Man, they're one of those. If it's just too good, too good. I'm going to sick pick something that is for the new year, new you type of person. And that is going to be the Tidy Up show on Netflix. If you have Netflix, you got to watch this. Or Tidying Up. Yep. With Marie Kondo. And this, I think, came out on Netflix either like January 1st or 2nd. I was like flipping through Netflix and I saw it. And I had never read her book. I was aware of her book. Her book is called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And so I watched the first episode and maybe like 15 minutes into the first episode, I was like, Courtney, not like you have to watch this, but you're going to love this show. And I think I should stop watching it so we can just watch it together. And we've since gone through every episode of this show because it is brilliant. It's like Hoarders, but without the shock and horror sensational sort of stuff. It's like actually useful. It's like here's some people's houses that are very normal people. And here's the various states that they exist in. And here are the various issues they're encountering. And she comes in and teaches them sort of her method about tidying up and cleaning up. And you might think that there's no way that that could fill up 8 shows, but every single show has sort of a different angle, a different story, and like a totally different learning experience out of it. And it's like one of those ones that after the end of each episode, there's like almost like a overarching message about it. About the experience. And I just found it so good. I'm sure a lot of people have tuned into this already. It was so good that by the second episode, I bought her book. I read her book in one day. And you should see our house right now. Our trash bin is filled up for like weeks and weeks and weeks now. Our recycling, we have 2 recycling bins and they are just jam packed. Our donations, we had to move them into a whole room of their own because the donations were taking up so much space in our house. And we're not hoarders. We don't really have that much stuff, but you just look around and you think, yeah, do I really need this? And maybe I'll Instagram a photo of my dresser drawers right now because they are impeccable. And every single day I wake up and I open my drawer and my shirts are all there in this little specific folding method. And I select one out. And it brings me joy. And I'm all in on this. It is like, it's so funny because it's like, we weren't really that messy people, but we have a new baby coming into our house and we want everything to just feel so much better. So I'm pumped. I love this show. I'm going to rewatch it.
Man, Caitlin and I were looking at it the other day and we're going to watch it together. And I think tonight is the night that we are both around. So
it's so good.
Caitlin read the book a couple years ago and we did a huge purge of our house. And now that we've got the next baby coming in now, we're just like getting rid of everything left and right and donating everything. And it's crazy how quick that stuff sort of creeps in.
Yeah, I had like VHSs that I don't even have a VHS player in the house. It's like, why do I have this? Like, I don't know. I just held on to it because it was one of my favorite movies. So I don't need this. Man. Like, I'll watch it somewhere else. I mean, it just changed the way I thought about my stuff. Yeah.
Sick pick. What about a shameless plug?
Shameless plug. I have a new course on styled components called Level 1 Styled Components. And this course is all about building a system to grow your design with. So it's all about structuring your styled components, different libraries that work with styled components, how to do sort of BEM style work within styled components using various libraries, how to get some of that functionality back that maybe you're missing from SAS with some other additional libraries, and really just how to structure, organize, and keep your code in a way that makes it really shine, makes it spark joy with your styled component. So check it out. Level 1 styled components available at leveluptutorials.com. You can sign up for the year and save 25% or percent, your choice. Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. I am going to plug all of my courses. So I was just looking at our stats and our podcast is growing every week. So if you are new to the podcast, Scott and I make courses. Scott has Level Up Tutorials. I don't have a name for it. It's just the West Boss courses. And I have a list of all of my courses available at westboss.com/courses, bunch of free ones and a bunch of paid premium ones. And they are all currently on sale just for a little new year. You can use the code Syntax for, I think it's an extra $11 off as well. So you can sort of stack that on top of the current sale. So enjoy. If you want to learn anything about React or ES6 or GraphQL or you name it, I'll teach it to you.
You name it.
Except for React Native.
Don't or Vue.js apparently.
Or that's my New Year's resolution is before the end of the year to do a show on Vue.
Oh my gosh.
Awesome. So that's it for today. Anything else to add?
Nothing.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.